can.
Okay. Then what is this going to be used for?
Well, what we do is we take these tapes, and I transcribe it on a bigger tape, you know, just a regular cassette.
Yes.
And then we send it up to Cooperstown, and wherever, I guess they've got a, in the library, they've got a Kurt Flood file. And in that, they'll take the tape and they put it in there. And then if somebody's doing research on the Cardinals or Kurt Flood or whatever, then they'll listen to the tape and use it if they can, or not use it if they don't like what you had to say or what I had to say, I guess.
Oh, okay.
So it's, I'm not going to use it for anything except send it to the library.
Okay, very good. Okay, fine and dandy. Let's go.
Okay, so in your book, The Way It Is, I believe is the title, it ended right after you left the Washington Senators, after you'd sat out a year and then came back, and you went to Spain. What have you been doing since then?
Well, you covered quite a bit of my life just in those few statements. When I left here after D.C., I went to Spain. I stayed in Mallorca, Spain, for almost 4 years. And I bought a restaurant and a bar there, and lived very, very comfortably in Mallorca, and just really enjoyed myself, and kind of cleaned my pores out. And of course, there's no place like America. And became very homesick. My parents were here. My kids are here in the States. And in 1970. Six or seven, I guess, I came back to the States, and I live in Oakland, so I came back to Oakland, and I stayed there for a couple of years, and I remarried. I married the girl that I've been dating for almost since 1966, so I've been dating her for almost 10 years, and we moved to Los Angeles, and where I reside now, as a matter of fact. Well, since then, I have my own art studio. I'm still in commercial art. The Kurt Flood Enterprises does 10 different things or so, and all baseball related. I do presentations on the college campuses. We talk about the reserve clause and about baseball and contracts, and there are men that are studying law in colleges that are very interested in the case that went to the Supreme Court. So I do quite a bit of that. I do baseball seminars, and I coach Little League. In Oakland, California, there is the Kurt Flood Sports Complex, and there are three Little League fields, a soccer field, a jogging field, an indoor facility for pumping iron and playing ping pong and whatever, and I kind of commute back and forth between L.A. and Oakland, and I kind of supervise that. And I'm 54 years old now, Paul, and I'm retired. Baseball allows you to retire. One of the great things that came from the organization that was built to take this case to the Supreme Court also gave us the world's greatest pension fund. So out of that, even though monetarily only Messerschmitt and McNally received money for the rest of my life and for the rest of the lives of a lot of men that miss free agency, the pension fund that we put together will take care of them. So I'm retired, and that gives me the kind of money that allows me to play these games.
How hard was it to leave the Senators and determine that your career was basically over?
Well, it was very difficult, as difficult that time as it was before. But Robert Short and I had a conversation long before I became a Washington Senator. I told him, "Mr. Short, I haven't played baseball in a very, very long time. And I don't know whether I can play baseball at major league, at the major league level or not." And he said, "Well, if you decide that you can't do it, then you can go back to Europe or wherever you want to go." But Ted Williams and some other very fine people were involved with the senators at that time, and I became very friendly with Ted Williams and the people that were running the ball club. But so many things happened that made it difficult for me to stay in the States, and my life was being threatened again. We went to New York, the one road trip I remember, and in Yankee Stadium, in my locker was a huge funeral wreath that said, "Rest in peace." And ugly letters, Paul, and just a very threatening situation that made it difficult to play baseball, made it difficult for me to be here. And as I told you before, recollecting all these things even causes me anguish, and I even hate to do interviews like this, because I love baseball. Baseball has been extremely kind to me, and it's unfortunate that there is a part of baseball that hits me right in my kitchen, and it's this part, the part that will probably be remembered more than the 15 years that I played professional baseball. And that is too bad. Yeah, to answer your question, leaving the Senators was a very, very difficult, but I felt at that time very necessary thing to do. The people that I involved in suing baseball, very powerful people, probably the most powerful people in this country. And at the time, you have to understand that the average fan who would give their firstborn child to wear my uniform did not understand that all was not well in baseball, and that there were men that were playing for no money. There were men that had to work two jobs in order to afford to play baseball. See how easy you forget. I had to work all winter in order to play baseball during the summer. And and it was caused by the contract that was just absolutely so unfair to the employee. And it was a difficult decision to make to go back to Europe.
Well, now that the reserve clause is semi-dead, I guess there's still a 4 or 5 year period where a player is the property of the team, but then after that period's over, they're a free agent if they desire to be. Has it changed enough, do you think? Is that sufficient to keep the competitive balance of the game like the ownerships likes to talk about, plus to give the freedom, you know, to the players so they can earn the kind of living they probably deserve?
Well, it's not really fair for me to make that judgment. I've been away from the game so long that I can't really honestly and truly give you a fair estimate on what it is to the player and to the management today. But what I do feel, though, is that the people that own baseball teams are smart enough not to make bad investments. And if they're going to invest money in a ball player or any other asset of their business, it's going to be to their advantage. We talk in terms of millions of dollars, and as a layperson, Paul, that is an awful lot of money. But when you're talking about show business, you're talking about television, the television and its industry, and you're talking about megabucks that's involved in professional baseball, perhaps I can't even wrap my comprehension around what is fair. They did a study several years ago, because in the media they felt that baseball players were getting much more than they deserved, whatever that means. And they found that the ratio between what the player made and what the owner gets met is the same now as it was when I played. Exactly the same ratio between what they're making now and then. So I don't know. That's secondhand information.
What's it like to be standing out in center field and with a Willie Mays at bat or somebody like that, and a long high fly that looks like it's going to go over your head, you know, and you're racing back towards it? What's that like?
Well, what's that like?
That's a good question, but to me that seems like it would be just the greatest feeling in the world.
You are seeing, you know what you're seeing when you look out there and you see Willie or me or any of these ball players here, you're seeing the finished product of many, 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 many years of long fly balls. And when that happens, your mind kind of goes into automatic, and your judgment, and you judge the wind and resistance and the shirts in the background and where you're playing and who hit it almost instantaneously. And you almost amaze yourself sometimes what you do without really... You're doing things right now with your body. You're breathing, you're looking at me, and you're computing me, and you're thinking about me. You know about 1,000 things. That happens when the ball hits the bat, and your body goes on automatic, and all the things that you trained yourself to be comes out then. But what is a great feeling, though, is since you are there in center field, and Willie is at the plate, somehow... you are his equal because you're in the same ballpark with him, and you're his adversary. Somehow that you can equate yourself with this incredible athlete.
I saw a thing one time that talks about, you know, you're talking about normal bell-shaped curves for talent, and this guy said, when you look at Major League Baseball players, you're looking at this little, you know, the extreme right end of the bell-shaped curve.
Sure.
You know, so the talent isn't distributed the way normal talent would be across the population. You know, it's the extreme right end of that curve. And, you know, how much of that kind of stuff to get to that extreme right end of the curve, how much of that is, you know, hard work, and how much of that is God-given talent?
Well, I don't think a lot of it is God-given. I think you can be as great as you want to with hard work, or you can be as poor as you want to. There are men that have been given bodies capable of hitting the ball with power. That part is God-given. But to be able to train yourself to hit a 100-mile-an-hour fastball with that same body, it takes just practice, 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 and confidence. When you say that Willie Mays has a better arm than I do, what you're saying is Willie Mays is stronger than me. So what I can do is be stronger. I might not be able to do it with the flair or the accuracy, and even though I think that would come with practice. But the men that are working at major league level, they work very, very hard from the time that they started playing baseball until they arrive here at this stadium at their craft. And some of the men that I've seen, I was very fortunate. I played during an era when that will probably never repeat itself. You mentioned Willie Mays, and of course he's at the top of the list of many, many world-class Hall of Famers. Willie and Bob Clemente and Bob Gibson and Maris and Mays and DiMaggio. I saw athletes that you will never see athletes like that again. And I'm here again. I came along at the right time because of that. No, not because of that. I was fortunate enough to see that. Whereas it might not repeat itself.
Why did so many of them come out of Oakland? You know, there was you and Frank Robinson and...
We went to the same high school together, you know, Veda and Frank and Jesse Gonder. Well, it's California, and I think the weather has a lot to do with it. Specifically California, we were just fortunate enough to have men that organized little leagues and men that were sincerely interested in having us play baseball. And we could play 11 and a half months out of the year in California. So I think a lot of that has to do with it. And you're talking about ghetto kids again who had little other interests other than athletics to detract them from being great baseball players. None of us went to college, but there you are.
Do you find the kids are playing like that now, or is it, you know, the lack of big, you know, empty lots and that kind of stuff, you know, keeping them from playing baseball? Or,
you know, in my area, I live in Los Angeles now, as I said, and things have happened in Los Angeles that is just, that eventually will hurt baseball and other professional sports, because the kids are afraid to go out and leave themselves vulnerable in open fields. The gangs out there have just been outrageous, and when you have that kind of a threat to your child wanting to go to the playground, then it affects the little league. They would rather become involved in something else than, other than baseball or basketball or the intramural sports. Well, that is unfortunate. So now baseball then is not a sport that generates a lot of revenue. Do you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
And so they drop baseball and they continue football, because football will perpetuate itself because of the money that they draw on with their fans in high school, not high school, but so much, but college. So I'm concerned. I really am concerned about baseball, and Major League Baseball has caused us to lose a lot of our minor league teams. So where do you learn this craft? Where do you learn to play like Willie Mays? They're learning to play like Willie Mays at Camden Yards. They're learning the fundamentals of baseball in the major leagues, and it's, you know, when I played for the Cardinals, we had 20 minor league teams, and we almost had to play for all of them before we had a chance to play for the Cardinals. That's not true anymore.
In your book, you had an appendix that was when Bowie Kuhn talked to the Major League Baseball Players Association, and one of the issues that was discussed kind of in depth in that little discussion with Bowie Kuhn was AstroTurf. I guess you got in right as AstroTurf was, I mean, you got out right as AstroTurf was coming in.
True.
And it appears that the players' concerns were legitimate, that a lot of people are getting bad legs on AstroTurf. Within the little bit that you played on it, did you notice that AstroTurf was...
Yeah, and we played on it at probably AstroTurf at its worst. They had no idea how to do it, and the only ballpark that had it was the Astrodome, and it was a nightmare. And we were concerned about our ankles and our knees. We were concerned you had to change your attitude about playing the outfield. You had to change your defensive strategy on AstroTurf as opposed to grass. Does that make sense? You can't play the big guys back and the little guys in. There's nothing as simple as that. You do not dive for balls on AstroTurf. So if you do not dive for balls, you do not allow yourself to become vulnerable on balls hit that you have to run in toward. So you have to change your whole opinion about how to play the outfield. Having said that, it's probably shortened the careers of a lot of great athletes 2 to 3 years. Who cares? The people that put AstroTurf in these fields, are they really concerned about us? I doubt that. It's a matter of economics, because they want to play football and baseball on these fields, and the only way to do it is with AstroTurf. I think AstroTurf has been the worst thing that's happened to baseball in my era.
One of the other issues you talked about in your book was the fear of players to basically go on the disabled list if they were hurt, because they were afraid that it would reflect badly when it came time for contract negotiations and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Do you think that the era of free agency has improved that situation, or has the pendulum swung the other way?
I don't know. There's a simple answer to that question, because it's such... Each individual has has his own ideas about what he's capable of doing. I could play with pain. I know men that can play with, cannot do that. They cannot play with any kind of pain. And they sit out, they sit down. I know men that will not play against certain pitchers, too. That's another story. But it has been rumored and heard around the clubhouse from a reliable source that blacks and Latinos always do that. If they get hurt, they sit down immediately whether they're hurt badly or not. It has been rumored and heard around the clubhouse by reliable sources that Latinos are lazy and they miss their turns and rotation and they do all kinds of ugly things. So I guess what I meant when I was saying that so many years ago is that we hear these rumors too, and I tried my best not to ever. I was never on the disabled list, but there are horror stories like G.R. Richards, who pleaded and begged and told him that he was hurt, and they said, well, here's just another nigger who wants to get paid and sit on the bench. I don't know what I'm answering your question now, but anyway, see, you get me, that I hate to do interviews like this.
Do you think it's improved? I mean, just on the outside looking in, do you think the environment has improved? There's been, you know, Henry Aaron wrote a book and Frank Robinson too wrote a book where they basically said that racism was kind of endemic in baseball.
It is, and it will always be. It will always be. When there's, you have to understand, it's not just baseball. It's a job. It's a job that has a very special place in our culture. It's a job that means money and celebrity. It's a job that when you become the manager, you get your drinking buddy as one of your coaches. And it is racism in its most subtle form. And as long as a handful of men own this industry, it will be divided up the way it is. Until we get until we get 24 black owners, it's going to be this way. You know, I'm going to have to play baseball here very shortly, Paul. I apologize, and you have to end this as soon as possible.
Okay. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Listen, it's my pleasure.
And I hope I didn't dredge up too many
you did.
Bad memories. I apologize for that.